I want to speak to you this morning about something important that is going on right now in the state of Israel, but in order to frame it, I have to talk about a fundamental conflict that exists in the soul of every human being. And I think maybe the best way for me to start is with toothpaste. When I was a child, my mother bought Crest. And we knew that that was the only toothpaste that reasonable people would ever use. Because my mother said Crest was the best toothpaste. And when I would go to other kids' houses and see that they used Colgate, or worse, one of the really frivolous toothpastes like Pepsodent, or Aquafresh, that didn't even have serious names like Crest, I would think to myself, how depraved are these parents that they don't know what we know, which is that you gotta use Crest. And when the day came that I discovered that you could be as kind and as informed and as good as my parents and use Ultra Bright, something cracked in my world. And that crack is something that everybody is afraid of and everybody experiences. It's not so much a crack of belief, although it is that as well. But it is the conflict between passion and pluralism, between believing something profoundly and deeply and holding to it, and still enabling someone to believe something that completely opposes it and thinking that's okay too. Because everyone says they're pluralist, and they are about things they don't care about. But when you get to the thing they really care about, all of a sudden everybody becomes a non-pluralist. They'll say, I really believe that everybody should express themselves the way they want, but nobody should be able to say that. There's always a point. People who really do believe that there should be a multiplicity of views and diversity and so on, if you say to them, what do you think about abortion, all of a sudden you find a non-pluralist. Only my position is right, and people who hold the other position aren't just wrong, but they're wicked, depraved, mistaken in profound ways. Exactly. You hear this from Democrats about Republicans and Republicans about Democrats. Of course I'm a pluralist, but how could anyone believe that nonsense? And the truth is that there is this clash between passion, that is believing something deeply and profoundly, willing to live for it and willing to die for it, and being pluralistic, and thinking that someone else might have an opposite opinion that is actually worthy and not just foolish and depraved. One of the places where this gets played out, and this is, of course, no surprise to you, is in the field of religion. Because you find, by and large, that the more passionately someone cares about their faith, the less pluralistic they tend to be. The people who tend to be more pluralistic are the people who tend not to be as passionate. And they don't understand, why can't everybody just practice whatever they want? But if you really believe that the author of the universe said, do this, then it reduces your tolerance for people who do that. And that's a problem. It's a problem not when you have, as you do in the United States, a separation of church and state. So you might think that my practice is terrible and awful and God's upset with me, but other than publishing an editorial, there isn't much you can do. But what happens when you start to couple together government power and religious passion? We see the baleful consequences of this all through the Muslim world, of course, where theocracies take religious passion and make it governmental policy. And that is a dangerous combination. And today, we turn our eyes to Israel, where there is separation to some extent, but in other areas, there is not separation of synagogue and state. And so you see the clash of two things that we really approve of, which is passion, because who, after all, wants lukewarm love or tepid embraces? We all think passion is important with individuals and with causes, and the pluralism that is necessary for any society to survive. There was a bill introduced in the Knesset called the Rotem Bill that would be a significant step in the delegitimation of all conversion outside of Israel, except for a very small and select group of rabbis. In fact, most, not only all Reform and Conservative, but most Orthodox rabbis' conversions would not necessarily be accepted because it vests conversion power in a very small number of rabbis in Israel who are, let us say, not liberal. And this you can understand from one point of view, because the rabbis who will acquire the right to determine who is a Jew in Israel, and by the way, not just conversions, but anyone in Israel, they could pull someone in off the street and decide whether they're Jewish or not. The rabbis who will decide that believe deeply, many of them, most of them, that they're acting in accordance with God's will, as expressed in the halakha, in Jewish law. And this is, after all, a Jewish state, and therefore, to them, what they are doing not only makes perfect sense, but it's what God wants. And I say that because we have to understand the opposite point of view at its best if we're going to disagree with it. To anathematize rabbis by saying, oh, they're dishonest and they're narrow-minded and they're only after power, that's to do a disservice to the pristine nature of the argument, which is, this is Jewish law, this is what God wants, therefore this is what we should do. But you and I know, I hope, that that argument only sounds pristine. Because the truth is that Jewish law, like any legal system, is a vast, branching, multiform, diverse, and very complicated set of principles, rules, and guides for living. And that's why in every generation, rabbis, teachers, scholars, and sages have disagreed with one another and have never succeeded in making one small group the group that is recognized by everyone. We know, for example, in the time of the Talmud, when Hillel and Shammai clashed in rule after rule after rule, what does God say in the Talmud about them? That both of them are the words of the living God. That no single set of individuals, however learned, no single set of rules, however comprehensive and humane, can in fact take in the diversity of the human situation. And after all, if you look outside the state of Israel, the vast majority of Jews who identify at all identify as either Reform or Conservative. So it is a complicated situation. And in Israel, it's increasingly complicated by the growth of non-Orthodox Judaism. The Masorti movement has 60 kehilot in Israel, 60 congregations, 3,000 young adults in the Marom network. Lots and lots of rabbis who are, unlike the rabbis who would determine conversion, who serve in the army, who are college educated, who have a very different orientation towards Israeli life from the Haredi, that is, the ultra-Orthodox rabbis, in whose hands these decisions would be made. So this is actually a powerful and important ideological fight for Jews worldwide to oppose the passage of this bill in the Knesset. It affects you and your children and your children's children, and has to do not with Israeli policy, but with the question of who's a Jew, which is a much broader and more comprehensive question than political, military, or economic issues that also bedevil the state. So in this, you have to think about the following. What principles matter most to you? What is it that you are passionate about, that you will defend, that you are uncompromising? How do you feel about the fact that a woman carrying a Torah at the Western Wall was arrested for carrying a Torah at the Western Wall? Put in a police car and carried away with the Torah still in her arms that she refused to surrender to policemen. Does that violate your principle of what Judaism should be about? How do you feel about the idea that the one place in the world where Jews actually can't worship the way you're worshiping right now, which is men and women together, is certain places in Jerusalem, even though they're public places like the Western Wall? That rabbis aren't recognized as rabbis legally in Israel the way they are here, not unless they're Orthodox rabbis. I can't go to Israel and perform a wedding as a rabbi. Those are serious questions that we have to ask ourselves and debate with ourselves. And I'm not suggesting that they're easy, because after all, most of us here aren't Israeli citizens. We're not voting there. And so our voices are rightly limited. But if you ask yourself this question, then you have to ask yourself, what religious institutions and establishments are you going to support in the state of Israel, and what voice do you want them to have? Are you going to send your support to a yeshiva that will delegitimize the kind of Judaism you practice, or to the Masoreti movement that promotes the sort of Judaism you practice? Do you know how many Israelis have come to America and said this is the first time they've sat in a service in which they felt comfortable? Because this doesn't exist there, except in as much as we help create it. It's not a comfortable or an easy situation to describe, but it is important to decide what it is you believe and what you want to stand for, not only outside the state, but also inside the state. And what kind of religious life you would like to see the only Jewish country in the world show to the rest of the world. It is not quite true, as the poet Yeats said, in a very different situation, that the best lack all conviction and the worst are full of passionate intensity. But it is sometimes true that the best don't show their conviction enough, that they do, in fact, lack that passionate intensity that would help create a world in which you can believe deeply about something and still acknowledge that others who believe otherwise have a place at the table. We have to encourage those of our sisters and brothers in Israel who are fighting for religious rights and pluralism. We have to encourage them with our voice, with our resources, And by promoting that idea, not only there, but here. After all, we know that the idea that Judaism was one thing ever doesn't accord with history. When people say to me, why did Jews fight so much among themselves? My answer is, because they're human beings. And we always did, as did every community in human history, like every family. That's what it means to care about things. But there are two ways to fight. There is the way that believes that the other voice must be shouted down and eventually silenced. And there's the way that believes that by combining voices, you get a more beautiful harmony. That's the harmony that we try to create here and we hope to hear there. So, this week, look around, do some research, send your wishes through the letters that we sent out electronically, and if you didn't receive them, you can contact our office and we will send it to you. Send your wishes to the Knesset and to the Prime Minister. Let people know that the more expansive, inclusive, pluralistic Judaism is in the State of Israel, the more it can serve as a model in a world which is getting increasingly fragmented and narrow, literalist, and intolerant. Look around this room. In this room this morning, there are Jews and non-Jews. There are people from many countries with many different backgrounds, children, adults, women, and men, and we have all lifted our voices together. Wouldn't it be nice if it didn't only exist in this room, but it existed for our sisters and brothers in the State of Israel? How much more true then would it be, Ki Mitzion Tetzé Torah, that the Torah's many voices would come to us from the land where it all began. Shabbat Shalom.